Yep, welcome into the Nooner here on this Monday. It being a Monday, that means this little segment happens in this dog and pony show.
Okay, which am I, the dog or the pony?
You're watch neither. Yourself. I was referring to the morning show in general, okay, you know. But but it is it's a Memphis Music Monday, and Donna is here. How are you?
I am. I'm good.
You stumbled your way right on down the stairs.
No bricks.
No bricks. No nothing.
Nothing to trip over. I got here. Okay.
When BJ Banks was here Wednesday, we had talked about it because I had just seen that you had that little accident.
And it was big. It was a big.
It was a big accident. Yeah, and I made reference to you to the bottle you always bring in here. I thought I don't know that that's not water
it's
in
coffee.
There. Coffee. It's vodka. Come on.
No, I do that through an IV.
No, I got you. Yeah, that's the way you do it. So did you have a good week?
I did.
Yeah.
I had lots of music. I had singer songwriter Wessie's Friday, and then I had. One last night at Stage Top. It was good.
Yeah, that's good.
Lots of cool acts.
And you're all up in that Sing for Your Supper thing.
Oh, yeah. I love singer-songwriters.
Yeah.
That's where my heart is. So.
Well, that's...
We have one today, too.
Yeah? Where?
Yeah. He's sitting... it's the kind of hairy guy right behind me.
That guy.
Right. His name is Tony.
Yeah, Tony's here. I'm a big fan of his work.
Me too.
He's always done some really cool stuff. And... The song that we have from him that we've been playing a lot of is Fool from Memphis, and I first heard it and fell in love with it the moment I heard it do it live, and that's what got me attracted to it.
That was born at Sing for Your Supper, actually.
I got the virgin performance, the
Did
very
you?
First one.
And when he broke it out for the
he
first time?
He broke it out at Sing for Your Supper. And
still had that new song smell on it at that point.
Right. So I feel really special. When it gets really famous, I'm going to be able to say, you know what?
I was there.
I was right there. I could have reached out and touched him.
Who says you didn't?
I probably did.
Oh, yeah.
I wasn't drinking that night.
She gets all handsy when she's out in public.
Yeah, right. Now, that's Doc that does that. You know, he was a sex therapist forever, so it's probably Doc.
Wow, that'll just save that for a whole new show right there.
We'll have Doc on one day, and he'll tell us
all
the stories. Yeah, call-in
thing, yeah.
Exactly.
That'd be frightening from our listeners having questions about that.
I know. I still have some questions about that.
You need to get Doc and Zeke Johnson together.
Oh, my God.
Uncle Zeke will tell you about the birds and the bees now.
I got to tell you a quick Zeke story.
Yeah.
He had sent me a message wanting to know when the Blues Jam was at Phoenix, and so I had answered him, and he apparently had several lines of conversation up on his laptop at the same time.
Oh, no.
So he sent me an X-rated one.
Oh, my.
And I thought, oh, my Lord, I don't even know you. And so I didn't answer. I didn't answer. Oh, you wouldn't believe it. It makes me blush just thinking about it.
So what was it?
Well, so then I didn't answer. About an hour later, he went, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Oh, my God, I cannot believe I did that. Oh, please forgive me. I thought you were one of my students.
Oh.
And then I went, oh.
Oh, damn.
I can tell this because he tells it to everyone. So I said, no, it was kind of fun. It was the most sex I've had in a few years. And he thought that was great.
Well, thankfully, it wasn't like a pick of his Johnson or something. Pardon the pun.
No pictures. It was all words.
He has a way with words, too.
Yes.
I know he does. He does. There are a couple of those older guys.
I've copped a couple of his phrases, yeah.
I know. He's
my favorite was his, well, she had the appearance of willingness.
Yes.
Right. In other words, if she had a pulse and her eyes were open.
Well, he can say something so dirty and use nothing but clean words.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. And he does it in music, too. I mean, he's an incredible songwriter when it comes to that. Yeah.
He's great.
Yeah, Zeke's one of our favorites.
He is just great. He is such a great historian and...
Yeah, he really
smart
is.
Smart as a whip, yeah.
He's fantastic. He's a treasure.
He's great. Well, we're excited to have you today because you're an awesome singer-songwriter. One of my favorites.
Oh,
maybe my
you.
Favorite, but if I say you're my favorite, then other people will get jealous and
yeah,
throw rocks
can,
at me.
I thought I was your favorite.
Down. You're not a singer-songwriter.
No, I'm just what somebody else might say.
Oh, that's what they'll say. Yeah, yeah. But anyway, I have special ones that... You have got to do today.
Oh, I can just sit here and say.
And we could break them up so we can get more.
We could totally do that.
You know, and there's one that, before we even talk to you, there's this one you do that has changed me so much. It's about the funny looking guy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I know sometimes I look at people strangely and I'll go, how could he be with her? What would that be like? Which is pretty twisted. But after I heard that, I don't mean anything graphic. Well, maybe.
I've been hanging around Zeek too long.
But I love that song. So.
Thank you.
But if you wanted to kind of...
Yeah, I'd love to play that for you. You want to hear the story first?
Yes.
Well, so the story was, I was on a work trip, and we were overseas, and we'd been gone for quite some time, and I was ready to get home. I was missing some of those comforts and pleasures of home. And anyway, we get on an airplane, airplane's got problems, they take us off the airplane, and say, well, you ain't going to get out till tomorrow. So, and they've kept our bags at this point, so they give us a bag of toiletries and, I kid you not, some paper drawers. Paper drawers.
Everyone needs them.
So I'm in no mood to be tripping with. I'm like, well, I'm not wearing paper drawers. I've gone through a lot of indignities for traveling, but paper drawers is just the
limit. It's just not there.
It's just the line. So anyway, I'm down in the bar, I'm waiting for my friends, I'm in a bad mood. And this guy comes in, and homeboy looked like Mr. Bentley from the Jeffersons. He was just had a big mop of red hair and kind of these buck teeth. And like I said, it ain't cool, but I was kind of making fun of him in my head. Now, not out loud. I'm not trying to start any trouble, but I'm making fun of him. Like, man, what's this guy? Well, girl comes in, and maybe, you know, maybe she's a little strange looking too, but I don't recall. But what got me, though, is when she sat down beside him and they kind of moved towards each other. She looked at him like he was the most gorgeous thing in the world, and I was like, here I am making fun of the luckiest man in this bar.
That's
so
right.
I had to write the song to remind myself not to
I
do
love
it.
I love it.
And it is a kind of thing you gotta kind of remind yourself to check yourself in your head, but it's called The Way She Looks at Him. Funny looking fella sitting at the bar, funny looking girl holding on to his arm, her eyes sparkle every word that passes his lips. She plays with her eyes, he lights up the smoke, they both laugh at an inside joke. They sit close, his hand is on her hip, and I can't help but feeling lonesome whenever I steal a glance at them. Man I wish someone looked at me the way she looks at him. Couple of kids, a blanket in the park, he's getting up his nerve for when it gets dark. He's real awkward, she don't mind a bit. He leans in, she pulls close, it's hard to tell who wants it the most. They're both scared, but not enough to quit. And I can't help but feeling lonesome whenever I steal a glance at them. Man, I wish someone looked at me the way she looks at him. A little old lady, a little old man holding on to this life the best they can. He's a pain in the ass, and she's crazy as blue. They hold hands, waiting on the dock for 50 years. She's been matching his socks. They don't talk, they just hope for good news. And I can't help but feel lonesome whenever I steal a glance at them. Man, I wish someone looked at me the way she looks at him. Funny looking feller sitting at the bar, funny looking girl holding onto his arm, her eyes sparkle every word that passes his lips.
Wow, I love it.
That's a great song.
That is so wonderful.
All of that from paper drawers at the airport.
Yeah, paper drawers at the airport. It kind of got me going.
It is so cool how you can see something out and it click, and then you write this incredible song. That's one of the things I've heard people say about you over and over again, is that it's like your humanness about you that people love. You say something, the lyrics elicits this response. People go, I've felt that way before, or that reminds me
that's the hope,
of
yeah.
something. And Mine are always kind of about love and loss and stuff.
But, I don't write too many love songs.
No, but you pick out these things that just, they hit people on all kinds of levels. Oh, it's great.
Thank you.
You'd be a good shrink because you must observe people a lot.
I do. I spend a lot of time observing people.
Yeah.
Does it start with like a turn of phrase with you then, or
a lot of times it's a turn of phrase.
Yeah,
and it kind of that if it gets a response from me, and I'm listening constantly to the way people speak, and I've been a lot of places, but in the South it's just a treasure trove, you know, of storytellers, the way people say things.
The witticisms,
we're talking about Zeke, you know, you can say something and using certain words that make a whole nother picture.
Exactly.
And I think in the South we do that a lot, actually, because we talk around things.
We do.
We very rarely
We dance
direct.
Around the elephant.
Yeah, we dance around it.
That's a new song, Dance Around the Elephant.
Dance with the elephant.
Yeah, yeah. Your friend Cecil has given me lots of little phrases.
Oh, yeah.
I've got 9 songs.
All the Sand Mountain stuff.
Crazy.
Yeah.
One day he said, "Everybody Wants to Be My Baby," and that became one of my favorite songs. Everybody Wants to Be My Baby. But not sure it was true, but it made a good song. So when you write a song, do you share it with your lovely wife, or
I've gotten to where I'll kind of wait till it's a little more whole, maybe. It's funny too, because she's a very literal person.
Uh-huh.
So, and I'm a very not literal person.
Right.
So there's kind of, and it's a great sounding board to see if something makes sense, because a lot of times something makes sense in my head, but it doesn't necessarily make, it's kind of like a lot of times coming into a conversation with me is like dropping into the middle of a conversation.
Right.
Even though you just got there, I've been having the conversation
in your head before your mouth opened.
So maybe I left a little bit out.
Sometimes I'd be better if I kept it in my head and never opened my mouth.
But. Right. And also I had to kind of figure out that, you know, especially with sad songs, she's just not a big fan of sad songs that I make, because usually, you know, she was around for the emotions that might have made that. So a lot of times she won't like a song, and it's not that it's a bad song necessarily.
She doesn't like it.
An emotional response from her. Like, I have a couple of songs. She's like, you know, if I never hear that song again, I'd be just fine. You know?
Well, what happens though when you've written something that has that comes from a deep emotional spot, and then time passes and you're not in that spot, and then you go to play that song again? I mean, do you have to put yourself back into that emotional state to really deliver
Or? Sometimes it's like smelling your grandma's perfume and you remember.
Right.
And then sometimes it's like, man, I'm sure glad I'm not there anymore.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So lately it's been a lot of, I'm not glad, I'm just glad I'm not there anymore. So I can really appreciate it.
It becomes like a mile marker along the path.
Yeah. It's like a tattoo or a scar. It's just, you know.
It's just there.
It's there. And
because songs do mature as you go along.
Definitely.
Yeah, and they change, you know, depending on how often you've played it, in front of who. You know, and all of that.
And then because actually the song takes on its own life and you have memories associated with the song.
Or like your children.
Later on. Exactly,
just kicking them out of the house.
And sometimes you say a song, it's like, I can't speak from that place anymore. And sometimes that song just kind of falls by the wayside.
Yeah.
I have one blues song, only blues song, really blues song that I've ever written. We were playing at Hard Rock and I wrote it. And I can't sing it because I cry, and I've tried.
Well, that's the best blues tune, Donna.
Oh, yeah.
It's one of
come
the
on.
Best songs I do. It's the one Mother Love used to say, you got to do that song, but it makes me cry. I can't get through it.
Well, stop crying.
And
you know, there's
some
no crying in the
can
blues.
Cry and sing, and it sounds great. I can. Mine sounds like, it's really horrible.
Were you just ugly crying up on stage?
I'm crying.
Never had that problem, luckily.
If you look at the photos of me singing, it's always an ugly face when I am, but... Well, that's cool. And at home, you have 2 twin boys who
No, I have a boy and a girl.
Oh, it's a
it's a boy and a girl.
Okay,
thank God it's
I knew
boy
you
girl.
Had twins, so... And are they both in music? I know your son
My son plays in the band. He's he's head over heels into music. My daughter is a visual artist, and she plays a little music. Not much when daddy's around.
Right.
Not sure about unraveling that whole thing, but... Yeah, we're a family of artists. My wife's an artist, so we're a family of fruitcakes, we like to say.
That's good. You think from the left side of your brain.
I guess that's how that works.
Yeah, I think so. At least that's what they say. Well, your son.
Yes, my daddy. I don't think
from
any side of my brain.
Unless you have no brain.
Right.
Your son plays what instrument?
He plays the keys.
Does he?
Oh,
okay.
Yeah. He's a.
Because I've seen the videos, and I was wondering. if that was him.
He plays several instruments, so I'll draft him to play whatever, but his main instrument is keys. He's a...
And you have a big band, a big old band.
There's eight of us in the big old band.
And that's why you named it the big old band.
The big old band. It was called some other things.
Real clever, Dave.
Well, we need to keep it up. We need to keep it clean. Yeah, keep it clean and easy.
Where people will remember.
Well, the big old band has a big gig coming up this weekend, too.
Yes, a very big one coming up. So
that's a great
one. We will be at the Cooper Young Festival and on the main stage at 11:15 a.m.
Like
11:15 a.m., folks.
Are you the very first act?
We are the first. We're warming the day up, so it'll be us and the Rice Drury Collective will be coming after that.
I love Rice.
Rice is great. And his songs are just...
They're all good.
I mean, it's like building a boat. His songs just... They're just watertight.
Oh,
you know, everything
so
kind of goes in together.
He's such a nice man, too.
He is. It's funny. I did a songwriter awesome. Night with him and Brian Hayes. So you want to talk about who the black sheep in the room was?
That's funny. Well, you just had a big gig just recently at Lafayette's.
Yeah, we did. We did Lafayette's.
Looks like you had a good crowd.
Yeah, it was good. And despite the storm, we had a good crowd. There was the night that big storm rolled through and power was going out. And luckily, we didn't lose power there.
I saw y'all when you played there. Was it the time before or maybe the time before that?
Yeah, we played there a couple of times, and it's always great.
Maybe it was the first time, but I was amazed at how big that sound was.
Oh, yeah.
With the violin, the fiddle, and the...
Yeah, the fiddle, the mandolin, and then...
Like eight people in
the band,
there's
eight people
right?
up there.
Big band.
And they're all amazing musicians.
And what was so funny is, you know how when you go hear a band play, a lot of times you talk, and then people... I hate that because I feel like they're missing it. Singer-songwriter nights especially.
Especially,
I want people to be quiet. But nobody was talking. I had my buddy Tio, and we had 22 people there that night. I really tried to get as many people
as I could.
I did really
great.
Well.
Yeah, you had a
but
huge contingent over there.
Yeah, but we weren't even talking because we were captivated by that sound. It was really good.
Yeah, and it's a very organic sound. I don't exactly tell them what to play. And I think... You're looking for the Juno Street Choir. This band is we all actually like each other.
That's great, like a family.
Yeah,
that helps. Yeah,
it helps
no
a
redheaded
lot,
stepchild up there either.
Yeah, no, it's everybody. You know, it makes practice hard sometimes because there's like five side conversations going because we all like each other.
Where do y'all all practice?
Over at the guitar player Brian Mulhern's house.
Okay.
He's got
because they have to have a
nice
lot
place
room.
In Midtown. And well, it's funny too because you know we'll be Carlos on the mandolin will be kind of stuffed into the doorway.
Yeah.
And if you notice, he never steps into the light. He's a man of mystery.
Well, that's cool. Yeah. Well, I enjoyed hearing you play when you play. But I know you don't just play with your band.
I do solo. I do duo stuff with Cecil. I mean, I'll play in any configuration.
Right, as long as you get to play.
Yeah, as long as we're picking
and
having
fun. I was
going
to give you some money.
Yeah, a couple dollars, you know.
50 cents.
Yeah, you
buy your beer.
Hamburger and gas money, I'm good.
Where's beer for 50 cents in this town?
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Where are you drinking at?
My house.
Your house.
You come over and sing at my house. I'll give you lots of 50 cent beers. But, it's been fun watching you play. My favorite thing that you do, though, is the Coffee in the Cadillac, which is...
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
You've been doing this, how long? Maybe
I don't know.
Six, 8 months, or...?
Probably a little longer than that, because I think I've done more than one Halloween one. But it's not... I do it on the weekends, and it's not on any necessary schedule.
It just happens when it happens?
Uh-huh. If you have one of those days, I don't have to go anywhere, so I can... I'll tip a little bourbon in the coffee and just share my thoughts.
I like them. I think I have watched every one of them. And I know you have them on YouTube.
Yeah, I've been putting them on YouTube.
And we have them on the Bad Penny website, mm-hmm. too, mm-hmm. where you can click over. We used to have all of them. I think we have a few of them where you can click
yeah,
on and go
there's,
see
there's
all
a lot
of
it.
Yeah, it's really
But
cool.
yeah, you know, I recorded an album in that Cadillac. It's been in my backyard for years now.
No, I didn't know that.
So yeah, I've recorded it. It's called Sedan DeVille Season 1. And it's just me and the Cadillac. Because I did it kind of like a radio.
Did it sound good, the quality?
It sounds decent. I mean, I'm a lo-fi kind of guy anyway. But yeah, it's, you know, and inside the car, you've got this big curved windshield. And there's a lot of cloth. And so there's just the right amount of reflection. I mean, you know, but yeah, it's still an old car sitting outside.
And sometimes
so you hear a
dog.
Lawnmower or a dog or something. But yeah. That's life, you know. You hear lawnmowers and dogs and then life.
That's
so.
True, yeah.
I saw one where you had your dog. I think it was a new puppy.
Yeah, yeah, I got baby Loretta.
And you
got
her
in there.
Yeah, that was cute. She's a cute dog. Is she doing okay?
Oh, yeah, yeah. She's a little, my daughter showed up there. She's a little street puppy. And
is she?
I got my daughter called. It's like, Daddy, three dogs ran up to me, and I'm on my way to work, so I'm taking them to your house. Oh, thanks. She didn't ask. She just told me.
Here they come.
This
yeah.
is happening. So I say, actually, we were talking about, I had a song that I wrote for my little girl when she was a little girl. And then as she's gotten older, we've kind of gone through the evolution of, oh, God, don't play that song, Daddy. You're like, would you play my song?
Aww.
So it's, yeah.
You
so,
do you
play it for
you?
Yes. Yeah, okay. This is.
And what is her name?
Her name is Francesca. We call her Chessie.
Wow.
The Italian shorting of Francesca. And I have a boy and a girl, and I don't know how people with more than one girl in the house, how it survives
I know.
The power struggle, the surge. Yeah. She is a tiny force of nature.
My daughter's not 5 feet tall, and
you know what's
up there. Tangle with her, because she'll never forgive them, and probably tear into them, too.
Oh, yeah, no, I don't worry about her at all, actually.
That's
she's
good.
But, yeah, this is called I Wouldn't Change a Thing. I got a girl and her eyes are blue. Drags around a teddy bear named Boo Boo. We brought her home, she would fit in a hat. Had me digging in the garbage for a porcelain cat. Leads me around on a little string. I wouldn't change a thing, no, no. I wouldn't change a thing. She's pretty like her mama, but she's crazy like me. Runs around barefoot climbing trees. Catches lightning bugs in a mason jar. Fights with her friends like a sailor in a bar. Leads me around on a little string. I wouldn't change a thing, no, no. I wouldn't change a thing. She sees magic in almost a woman, but she's still my little girl. She thinks that I'm made of money. She don't think my jokes are funny. She thinks I could wrestle a bear. She used to let me braid her hair. Leads me around on a little string. But I wouldn't change a thing, no, no. I wouldn't change a thing. She sees magic in the world. She's almost a woman, but she's daddy's little girl. She makes messes when she cooks. She don't care that her daddy's a crook. She got a smile that'll light a room up, and I ain't ready for her to grow up. Leads me around on a little string. I wouldn't change a thing, no, no. I wouldn't change a thing. I wouldn't change a thing.
Wow.
That's from a little girl.
Her friend Jessica. Chessie. How cool.
My little Chess. Yeah. Yeah, she's doing good. She doesn't live with us, but she lives real close. We see her.
Does
we see
he?
Her plenty, you know.
Neat. Has she started to school?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Both of my kids go to the University of Memphis.
Oh, that's neat. That's neat.
Well, you're practically an empty nester then, aren't you?
It's beautiful.
It really is. It's glorious.
We had kids. We had kids pretty early on. Most of my friend group, you know, a lot of my friends are having kids now. And then my kids kind of grew up in a band practice. We were very young when they came along. So it was totally experimental, and it was kind of like they were just hanging out for various band practices. And one of my friends like, man, I want my kids to turn out like your kids. I mean, how am I going to do that? I said, well, I'll tell you what. I'm going to come over to your house about 11:30 tonight with a case of beer talking about who we got to bail out of jail. Oh, my God, no, you can't. It's like, that's how my kids grew up. So, and you were the one, if I recall, coming over to my house with a case of beer nearly midnight talking about bailing somebody out of jail. So it's all part of it.
That's great. Does she know what she's going to specialize in?
She's doing art history.
Oh.
Yeah. She's, I think she got the travel bug from the old man, so I think she's wanting to
cool.
Get into a career she can travel for.
If I open the gallery back up, I'll call you.
You had to give her a shot.
Yeah, that sounds great. Well, I know people probably want to see you perform live, and I know you do solo and duos, too. like on a regular basis, don't you? Don't you do Bell Tavern?
Yeah, we have a regular Tuesday night at Bell Tavern.
So you're there every Tuesday
yeah,
night.
Yeah, we're there. It's me and Andrew Geraci, Carlos Gonzalez, Evan Ferris. Honestly, whoever shows up.
I didn't even know Evan Ferris was back.
Yeah, yeah, Evan, you know.
I love him.
Drifting Evan
Ferris.
He
is the sweetest guy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he played with me the other night. He's another one of those guys that just makes you sick. He can pick up any instrument.
I know.
And a great songwriter on his own, too.
I see a video of him sitting on his bed playing, I think. I missed him so much. He was
yeah, he's also, I don't know if you've heard a lot of his original stuff. He's a fantastic songwriter.
I've heard a few. Yeah, he is. He's great. Well, that's good. So they can see you at Bell Tavern on Tuesday nights.
Yeah.
Anything else that you do on a regular
basis? That's probably the only regular, you know, very regular thing. But I'm somewhere all the time.
I know you are.
I can't say no.
Page the other night looking for a photograph for something. I went, oh my gosh, you were really busy.
Yeah, I can't say no.
I know you were on that that other radio station, which we won't mention.
Oh yeah.
Recently, so you're going to get a reputation for being a radio host.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, you got to spread the scent around. Yeah,
you got to make the rounds.
Radio rocks. In fact, I like it better than TV.
You know, in a lot of ways,
I've tried both, and I like radio better. I grew up loving radio. When you grew up, how did you get your music that you fell in love with?
Oh, radio.
Was it radio?
It was, you know, not to mention any competitors, but I mean, I pretty well bounced between Weevil and Rock 103 was kind of where I was back and forth from.
So yeah. Bouncing? Well, no, that was probably before you.
Nothing wrong with that. I don't listen to this when I leave.
How long were you at Rock 103?
14 years.
Oh, I remember. Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, yeah, me and Bad Dog. Yeah,
oh,
yeah. We had a thing over there, and before that, I was doing afternoons with Dennis. You know,
it was kind of funny because I worked for Clear Channel TV, and remember, I guess yeah, you were there because you came over to the station when the crane was over 103, and you guys had to all bug out
when Hurricane Elvis came and it destroyed the building. We were down on Beale Street at the time.
Yeah, down on Beale Street, right.
203 Beale. And
so everybody came over to the TV station and you guys were working out of the station. It was kind of cool for me because I was like, you know, I've been listening for years and years, and to see everybody, it's like,
we had to. It was like this emergency thing, and we were down there in the middle of the night trying to get this radio station back on the air. And one of the engineers at 103 had said, listen, I need you to do us a solid. And I said, what do you need for me to do? And they had me and a police officer break into the building. It was all cordoned off.
Yep.
So in the middle of the night, I went in there with a backpack and I was taking like bits of equipment out of there so we could get on the air. And we had like a very specific hard drive that had all of our commercials on it, and another one that had all the music. And we set up this thing in the newsroom.
There was a closet. Room on the newsroom.
Shift
yeah.
Radio.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I helped Duncan set that up actually.
Yeah, that was an incredible experience. And I think we were down there for like 10 days or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, it was a long time. That's where I met Dylan.
Dylan Cramer. Yeah.
Great guitar player.
The Dilly Llama.
Yeah, the Dilly Llama. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that for me that was actually a lot of fun. And I can remember, too, because we just have to do things with the engineers and, like, send things back and forth. And actually getting to meet everybody in a situation of, like, all right, well, hell, what do we got? What can we make it work with?
Sure.
And it was the duct tape and baling wire of the thing. Was just
yeah, it was improvisational stuff. And quite frankly, that radio station never really sounded any better.
Right,
yeah. It went off really well.
Cool.
Yeah,
but we had a big old time with it. It's like, oh, yeah, our cousins are camping out. And
yeah. It was fun.
It was a lot of fun.
It's always been fun.
I drive by that building quite a bit, and it stuns me that it's vacant.
I know.
That's a beautiful old building down there.
It really is. It's funny because I drove up in the parking lot the other day, and I remember specifically we had to mount a satellite dish on the side.
Yeah.
And they teased me. The guys, I welded up the satellite dish mount, and the guys teased me. My dad was a shop teacher, and so everything kind of runs like that. In fact, I've been told I had the stage presence of a shop teacher.
Yeah.
Surprisingly not.
Oh, no.
But I welded up this mount, and the guys teased me about it for years, and like that had to have been 15, 16 years ago. It looks like the day it was made, and the building's rotting around it. But it's this angle iron monstrosity I built.
That's awesome.
And it's not going to go anywhere.
No, I could have hung a Volkswagen off of it.
Yeah, outside of that, the studios we had on Beale Street, they had a dish that was on one of the poles.
Oh, yeah.
And they weren't allowed to put anything permanent, if you will. So the engineers used probably, I don't know, 7 or 8 rolls of duct tape to get this thing stuck to the... and it held up. It's probably still there. I don't know.
Yeah, in fact, when you guys moved out of there, we went and salvaged some stuff. And while we were in there, this homeless guy came in and started talking about, hey, we own the building and all this stuff. And me and the chief engineer, we kind of slid out and left the IT guy in there with him and just kind of stood at there laughing. Like,
yeah, the squatters moved in almost immediately.
Yes, it was overnight. But yeah, that's why. So that's quite a digression.
Here on this Memphis Music Monday here, Donna is here.
You didn't say that with enough excitement.
Donna's here.
Donna's here.
Made my day. My whole week has been
and
made.
Tony's here.
And Tony is here.
Yeah. And Rick's here.
Sort of.
And
barely able to hold my head up.
Girl and Doc.
Rosie. Yeah.
Yeah, Rosie.
Rosie's here. Doc's here.
Not my granddaughter, but the other Rosie. We were talking about the music that you grew up listening to on radio. Who did you love? I mean, who inspired you to be a musician?
It was kind of a variety of stuff. That's the cool thing about Memphis is that you're exposed to such a variety. I mean,
exactly.
We were listening to Tom T. Hall in my dad's truck. You know, I was listening to what was on the rock and roll station.
Tom T. Hall.
And you know, through the Stones and Stevie Ray Vaughan, mm-hmm. I found myself, you know, going way back into the blues. I mean, there were a couple of years there when I was younger that it was old blues or nothing. That was all I listened to.
Me too.
And then kind of brought back the country music I grew up on and kind of, you know, everybody's kind of trying to figure out how to blend it together. So I play what I like. And if you go see the band show, you know, you'll hear probably a little more R&B and soul than you expected.
Surprising eclectic mix.
Yeah,
for sure.
It's pretty fair. In fact, the last Lafayette show we did on that old William Devon song, you know, be thankful for what you got.
Oh my gosh.
Which is kind of a blast with the violin.
Yeah. I bet. She's a great violinist. Oh my goodness. She's amazing.
Now, Allison?
Alice Hazen.
Oh my God, Alice. Yeah, she is delightful.
She's great. And she's just the coolest person anyway. Yeah, and when she picks that fiddle up, it's just like, good God.
That's amazing. Yeah. So you were listening to this music that you liked. So did you want to play guitar when you were really
young?
Yeah,
I wanted to be a guitar player, actually.
That's what you
wanted to be. Some of my cousins had a band. Exactly.
Exactly.
No, that really worked out.
You got a great one.
I do. She's luckily, adorable. It was none of the girls that went for my guitar playing or fast cars, because I'm sure that could have got me in all kinds of trouble.
So how old were you when you started playing guitar?
I was about 12.
Oh, so you started.
Believe it or not, I'm a slow learner.
you sound wonderful on the guitar.
Thank you. It's a compulsion. There's almost always one in my hand at home.
I was surprised one time. I think on another radio interview, you were telling me that you hadn't been writing music all that long.
No, I always just felt like that was something that, you know, well, maybe other people do that. You know what I mean? Because there's definitely a kind of a self-consciousness about it.
Isn't that something?
And there seems to be a head game among, you know, some songwriters of making it sound like it's this impossible magic that mere mortals couldn't possibly
exactly
do.
What you're
and it's like, for me, it's like, well, I want to hear somebody talking to me the way I talk or the way they talk.
I think that's what makes you so unique.
I think if you're speaking in your own voice, it's not hard. When you try to speak in somebody else's voice, it is hard. You know?
It is. It is. And you relate, if you write about things that you've been through or things you relate to, that always makes it so much
more
believable.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Well, that's cool.
I mean, I feel like the point's to make people not feel so alone, you know?
Yeah, I think so, too. So how long have you been writing music?
I've written, like, you know, all along I was writing parody songs and humorous things. Mm-hmm. As far as I really dug in to start writing songs, probably about 4 or 5 years now.
Yeah, I was thinking it was about...
So it was,
I've
been a guitar player, but Memphis is lousy with guitar players, so...
Yeah, I think if you ever stopped writing songs, stopped playing music, you should be a stand-up comic.
Oh, wow, yeah.
I think that might be a calling for you. One of my other favorite songs that you've got to do is, and you got to tell the story first.
Oh, yeah.
The story's the best part.
The story.
About your dad and buying cars and a funny incident that happened.
Oh, yeah. We used to hustle old cars when I was a kid. My dad was a shop teacher, and we loved old cars. And, of course, you know, we were doing this on teacher kind of budget, so we would buy old cars we'd find mostly in some questionable neighborhoods, and we would sell them, take the parts off of them, get them running, and that's how we kind of had cars of our own to play with.
Right.
So anyway, he would find these cars, and we'd go back in his old truck, and we'd go buy these cars. This one particular car, And I was always, you can tell how pretty I am. You can't see it through the radio, but it's true.
Oh, they're looking on the camera.
He's got good hair, too. Yeah.
I was the face of the operation, actually. I was the more bumbling of the two brothers. So like, go get the title from the old lady. Go do this. Go do that. So I was going to get the title, and I'll let the song speak, but it's a true story. It really happened. I was about, I don't know, 11, 12 years old.
Oh, my goodness.
Kind of warped my little brain. And, of course, and they teased me about it for years. So, you know what Cecil says, in the South, we don't get mad, we write a song about it.
That's right. That's right.
I went and wrote a song about it. This is the absolutely true story of the time we bought a car from a dead man for $50. Everybody likes a story that rhymes. Did I ever tell you about the time we bought a car from a dead man for $50? Wouldn't contradict what my daddy said, but I'm telling y'all, this man was dead face down at his kitchen table in a bowl of milk. And my old man couldn't resist a deal on a rusted hunk of automobile, and his two sons shared in that affliction. 40, 50, or $100, the Maynard Sons Automotive Archaeology Scholars would rid you of your unwanted pieces of yard art. Now, I don't exactly recollect how we come to find this particular wreck, but we loaded his old truck for an adventure. We met the old lady on the scene, we exchanged politeness and pleasantries, and we backed up into the driveway to start the loading. Now maybe I was just standing idle, but got elected to go inside and get the title, and friends, that's when I ran into the horror. She said, baby, do you want something to eat? But my mind had to fight the will of my feet to keep running away from what I seen at the kitchen table. Pushed up to the table in his wheelchair, that old man didn't move so much as a hair, and I thought, man, maybe he's just sleeping. Now, friends, you ask, how did I know he was dead? Because a cat ran across his head, face down in what looked to be a bowl of Honey Nut Cheerios. I ran out the door, suppressing a holler. I said, Daddy, give the lady your $50 and let's get ourselves the hell on out of here. My daddy laughed and my brother howled, but I didn't find it a dang bit funny how. I was only one in the house with that dead man. To this very day, me and my pop disagree as to the sad tale's veracity, how we bought a car from a dead man for $50.
I love it.
My wife learned to drive in that car, actually.
That makes it even better. What a great song. Oh, my goodness. I love it. I love your songs. They're so amazing.
You.
I was watching one of your Coffee and the Cadillac episodes the other, I think the last one you did on the holiday, and you were talking about having a job and not you know, you've got this great reputation for being the sweetest guy. You help so many people. I know, because I hear it.
That's what I work with, though.
But I've also heard from a close friend of yours, you don't take any crap from anyone.
No, he doesn't. So, I'm straight shooter.
I'm sensitive to that.
Yeah, so I think that's really cool that you're really sweet, but you take no crap. And I'm able to say crap, right? But there's a song that you sang about the Having my name on the shirt,
yeah, like Rick does right now.
Yeah, right now. Yeah.
From
a mechanic shop. Yeah,
right.
Yeah. It's a long story.
You don't look like your average mechanic.
No, it's because I'm not.
Right.
But I think that's part of the charm too, is that that same courage that makes you not take any crap helps you to put those words out there and those lyrics out there, and you don't really care where they land, and they're awesome. I mean, they're, you know.
Well, that's the thing. It's like with any type of art, it's not your job to set the rules. It's the beholder or the listener that gets to figure out what it is.
Absolutely.
You know, how it hits.
This is my truth.
And there's a lot of people, though, that try to play it safe. From owning an art gallery for over 20 years, that's one of the things you learn is if it shocks them and they don't like it, you've still elicited a response. Exactly. And that's what you're looking for.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily want it to be a negative one. You'd rather it be a positive one. But the fact that it makes people think.
Depends on the artist.
Right. And that's what your songs do. But I want you, I know we're probably going to talk a little bit more, but I want you to do that song.
Oh, yeah. Too. It's called Name on My Shirt.
And we've got a whole list. I know we got to do Fool for Memphis or Rick. And I've already told me I can't come back next
month. And I got to tell you a story about when I worked in the bingo hall, too. That's
Yeah. Well, tell us that.
And you probably hear a whole lot of Johnny Cash in these songs, and this is how it goes.
I love Johnny Cash.
And I feel like, you know, I always felt like Johnny Cash was the kind of the working man's voice. But no, I'm excited to be in a broadcast where I can say just kind of whatever the hell I want.
Well, sure.
Yeah. It's hard to tell this story without. I used to work at the bingo hall of the Interman Church of the Future. Olive Branch, Mississippi.
Are you teasing?
Wow.
I'm dead serious.
Is it still there?
It's still a bingo. It's a bingo hall again. It wasn't for a while. It's down at 78 and Craft Road. But for this golden era, and honestly, I still
have... You can't make this stuff
great up. Friend. You really can't make it up. I still have great friends from this time in my life. I was just out of high school, and we'd met some folks. There used to be a New Age bookstore over on Park Avenue.
Uh-huh.
And my wife wanted to go in there. We were dating then. So we go in there, and she meets the people. Well, the girl who was running its boyfriend is a musician, and while they're talking about whatever, we, you know, kind of do a little dance around. And we're kind of into a lot of the same stuff. So we started playing some music together. They closed it was basically funded by this bingo hall. They closed that location, moved the store. At some point, my wife starts working there. Moved the store into the bingo hall down in Olive Branch, so... I'm always hanging out. They're like, well, hell, let's give you a job. So they gave us all jobs. So me and just kind of this cast of characters ended up selling bingo cards to old ladies, right? But they have to maintain the church thing. Now, I say the Interman Church of the Future is basically the religion of you surround yourself with whatever white light of bullshit lets the state of Mississippi keep your gambling permit up. And so there was a riot once. There was actually a riot. I didn't work there anymore. I went back to help my buddy out that he was running the kitchen. And the Shriners bingo hall down the road. Now, this is...
The competitor.
This is the competitor. Now, and also bear in mind that...
This is awesome.
Much of the DeSoto County Police law enforcement community is involved with the Shriners. So this, it gets thicker. So anyway, the Shriners... paid the caller to drop another ball in the hopper on the last game. Now these are like, this is serious bingo. like the Saturday night big game was $2,500 payout.
Yeah.
Wow.
And they sent buses to these retirement communities to pick these people up. So you've got, you know, this huge building, there's several hundred retirees, and you know how old folks are when they get cheated.
They're like me.
They tore the place up. And Olive Branch PDs in there. These poor guys, some of them, you could tell they just rolled out of bed. They just shoved pistols in their shorts, and they're down there trying to quell this old person riot. That was the bingo hall riot of about 95 or 6, I would say.
How funny.
So, yeah. So, anyway, this is kind of this environment, but we're all kind of, you know, we all drank a lot, and we all just kind of enjoyed, you know, kind of a punk rock ethic to everything.
Right.
So they would they'd give you an extra $10 if you go to the church service Sunday, the church service.
Yeah.
So somebody would be sitting there. So we'd go back in the
kitchen.
Pay
you to worship.
We'd fill these fountain cokes about three quarters full, and then we would just take a gallon of whatever Rod Gut whiskey we'd gotten and just kind of top the cups off, and we'd sit out there. And sometimes I played in the band. And Smoochie Smith, the legendary Smoochie Smith. Smoochie played
dad's
the piano. This amazing, and apparently he's still out there rocking. He's playing. I was up in Covington, and I was like, oh yeah, Smooch is coming in a couple of weeks. I need to go see him. But yeah, occasionally I'd play guitar in the little halftime band that they'd have, and Smoochie he'd get a pack of peanuts and he'd set it on the piano, and in the middle of a piano solo, he could lean down and kind of shake some of those peanuts into his mouth. Finish the peanuts, get a sip of his drink, and launch right back into a vocal like it was like literally.
Wow.
I think the man could play the piano.
I've seen him play it with
doing,
his feet,
oh yeah,
his elbows, everything.
Yeah, Smoochie's
his head,
just amazing.
You know, it's crazy.
And he'd get ornery with me sometimes, but he was a great dude. But anyway, I have a habit of telling 10-minute stories for 2-minute songs. But so anyway, they get these old ladies. But the problem is, like, we're all a bunch of young dudes, and like these, you know, when a woman reaches a certain age, she doesn't.
She's beautiful, right?
She's absolutely, but she does and says just whatever the hell she wants. So you know, you'd be walking along, and feel like some of these old ladies would pinch you on the ass. And you look back and I'm like, do that. So, yeah. So there was that. And then there was the sweaty brassiere money was the other thing that was a hazard of the job.
Ew.
So anyway, the story is a little bit of a stretch. No charges need to be filed. But the song is called Granny Slipped Me a Mickey. Well, it was 1995 and my career had hit a wall. I was selling scratch-offs at the Interman Bingo Hall. Sometimes I'd play my guitar with the legendary Smoochie Smith. But Granny slipped me a Mickey and I ain't been right since. Everybody knows what a Mickey is, right? Now sexual harassment, it ain't just for girls, you see. There's a woman as old as my grandma, she was making eyes at me. She pulled a 20 from her brassiere, she gave my ass a pinch. But Granny slipped me a Mickey and I ain't been right since. Granny slipped me a Mickey and it rocked my whole world. There's still a lot of mischief in that bingo playing girl. Mothball, menthol, and camphor, man, they make for a strange incense. But Granny slipped me a Mickey and I ain't been right since. Now the first thing I remember was a dry taste in my mouth. Next thing I was waking up on a plastic-covered couch. There was breakfast on the table, there was a cute little picket fence. Granny slipped me a Mickey and I ain't been right since. Granny slipped me a Mickey and it rocked my whole world. There's still a lot of mischief in that bingo playing girl. Mothball, menthol, and camphor, man, they make for a strange incense. Granny slipped me a Mickey, and I ain't been right since. Now she may have store-bought teeth, and she may be over the hill. But every year I get a Christmas card with a $10 bill. She was older than the Queen of England, but she treated me like a prince. Yeah, Granny slipped me a Mickey, and I ain't been right since. Oh, Granny slipped me a Mickey, and I ain't been right since.
Wow.
That was my time at the Interman Church of the Future.
And good for Granny.
A life lesson right there, really.
Old cougar pays off.
Yeah, I think these ladies went by cougars. I think we had some genuine bobcats going.
That is so funny. I love that song.
But we had a good old time. Like I said, it was the same. I'm still friends with a lot of those guys. And we always say that there's going to be a book one of these days when enough people are already gone. That
I had somebody that was an artist in my gallery that did a whole huge painting made with those bingo markers.
Yeah, the dauber. Yeah, bingo dauber.
So cool. And I kept wondering, where did you get those? And he explained it, but it was great.
You know, that's a thing now in some bars is the open bingo thing.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I don't understand it.
I don't either.
Karaoke.
At the Bro Bar there in Cooper Young, the Cafe Olay.
Yeah.
On that back patio. I was walking the dog, and there's all these kids in there, and they're playing bingo, and I'm walking right here. You know, I, 31, and it's like, really?
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
This is like punishment, man.
Yeah.
Although I say when I worked there, we had a Christmas party and did a drunk employee bingo. Now, that was pretty fun.
Well, yeah.
That's funny. It's a good way to have a party.
Oh, yeah. Lube it up.
Yeah. So that was in 95. So you saved all these memories from way back, and then you didn't start writing until a few years ago.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've always been
able to put all that together.
I'm a storyteller. I've always told stories.
I know. Have you?
Or like I say, I'm a third generation Memphis bullshitter. So,
I think I like the stories. I don't know. I love the music, but almost as much.
Yeah, it's. I keep telling my dad, if you learn a couple of chords, you could tell the same story over and over again. Nobody ever gets tired of it.
You know, it's funny because I've said this before. You see musicians who are so talented, but they don't really interact with the audience. They just get up and do their thing. They may say the title of the song, but they don't really interact. And so they don't bond. They don't connect. But the audience, you do.
Well, introversion is kind of a part of the, it's, you know, because you do have to spend that time alone, and you have to you have to build the song on your own. But then when you put it out into the world, and it's an interesting thing. And for me, it's, you know, we were talking about Cecil. Cecil, you know, is very extroverted and gets that energy.
Do you think?
And it's his power source. And for me, I love the people. I love hanging out. But also when I do a show, I'm about, after 30 minutes after the show, I'm about talked out. So there's definitely a balance of that introversion and extroversion of where you create the art from, and then where you, when you actually present it. I mean, the song wasn't born on the stage. It was born, you know, in a lonely room or a lonely car. Mm-hmm. I'm often alone, but never lonely.
Right. There's a big difference.
But it is a balance of how you, you know, when you put it out into the world. I know some fantastic musicians, I mean, just like you're saying, they have, you know, pretty heavy social anxieties.
Amazing.
Thankfully,
but
I lack the sense
true.
For too much of that.
Yeah. Well, you seem to do this so easily when you tell your stories, and a lot of times they're comical. But said you don't write many love songs.
Right.
Is that more difficult to be serious? Or?
I don't know, that's because I definitely write serious songs,
don't play them out as much.
Right. And it depends on where you catch me. And like if I've only got, you know, so much time with people, I don't want to be a downer. You remember I'm B.B. Cunningham?
When
I used to work in a recording studio, and I didn't have a lot of chances to be, we used to do stuff from Memphis Songwriters Association. Uh-huh. And B.B. was on one of those, and I was like 18. I was just, you know, oh God, it used to break my balls all the time. It was a while before I figured out that it was affectionate, you know?
Right.
And
we
were playing songs for these people to judge, and then BB's comment always stuck with me. It was just this long downer of a song, and he said, "Man, I guess it's an all right song, but ain't nobody gonna pay $5 for a bad trip." And that has been one of those things that is like one of those things. There's a couple of nuggets of wisdom that come back when I'm writing something, and I can hear, you know, BB's voice saying, "Man, ain't nobody gonna pay $5 for a bad trip." And it was like, "You're right." So I you know, I do it.
I
but
can
I was,
feel a song from that.
Yeah, I feel like
I'd
the
like
love,
to sing
the
how lonely I am,
has
but
been,
yeah,
been bucketed. I won't say dry because there's new ways to say everything, but I don't really feel like I have a new way to say a lot of the things that are in mm-hmm. your standard love song, so I stay away from it.
I know it's been years ago, but I read some statistics one time, and they were talking about something like 80% of the love songs were about broken hearts.
Yes.
And only, it was like 20% were actually about good relationships.
Right.
You know, and
not,
I don't even
so
know
much
that it's
good
that
relationships, but normal relationships.
Normal, yeah.
You know, and I think there's a lot of, I try to concentrate on maybe the extraordinary things that happen in everyday life. Mm-hmm. Because if you got to admit, I mean, we're zooming around in cars, we're doing all these things. If you ever stopped and really thought about how all the pieces fit together,
I know,
it's a damn wonder any of it works. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's amazing.
People say they don't believe in miracles. Like, look around you.
Know.
You know what I mean?
I think we get so busy sometimes with the electronic age and texting. I hate it because whenever you perform, there's so many people that are on their phones. And I do it too, you know. But it's like I've started trying to journal a little bit, and I want to start writing letters again. That's one of the things I haven't done in so long, and I used to love to do because it's
writing letters is an art. Actually, I picked up a book a while back at a yard sale, and I refer to it occasionally as the letters that Van Gogh wrote to his brother. Van Gogh was a very sensitive soul.
I love
soul.
Van Gogh. Yes,
yeah.
He was.
You should check it out. It's Van Gogh's letters.
Love his art.
You can find him. And it was interesting because the way he wrote about. It was almost a confessional, like he had these thoughts he needed to get out, and he would write to his brother. And it was really interesting the way that he organized those thoughts and how, because he observed things and how things, you filter that artist filter that he put it through. Mm-hmm. And I actually had written one of the songs the band does. It was actually inspired by, I got to go to the Van Gogh Museum, and they had a display about his mental health. And a lot of what his mental health, that display, you know, because obviously everybody knows the ear and and the suicide.
Right.
And so people tend to kind of pigeonhole him into that. But a lot of that display was the self-portraits he made. A lot of the self-portraits, you know, he cared nothing about, and he actually would make them, then he would turn the canvas over and make a commercial painting. So a lot of these self-portraits were recovered. And there was a particular self-portrait that he was had a glass, you know, it was like a glass of a drink, mm-hmm. and it was just kind of this kind of dreary, and it looked to me like a mirror image almost. Mm-hmm. I was like, man, I can remember, you know, a night sitting in the Buccaneer, you know, at a pretty dark spot in life, and, you know, at the tail end of a 2-day drunk, and seeing my reflection in the mirror behind the bar and not recognizing it, and kind of as an impetus to get your shit together. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And it actually came out a pretty happy song. But it was one of those things of, you know, seeing how you see yourself, and then when you look in that, and then you don't recognize your reflection anymore, it's, you know, you got to do something about it. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of one of those things. So, yeah, and that's why I was so interested in his letters. And one of the things in Van Gogh's letters book, is, despite what was going on, he was always a lot of gratitude. There was mm-hmm. so much gratitude, you know, expressed in his letters. Wow.
How neat.
So, yeah, the song's called Self-Portrait with a Glass, and the band will be playing that one.
Is that one you do solo?
Yeah, I do it solo also. I can run it for you real quick. It's not too long.
In my mind, I'm still a young man, though the mirror does not lie. And in my head, I still have plans and dreams that I never have the time to try. There's a glass that sits before me, and it runneth over with my life. Often sweet, but sometimes bitter. Sometimes it cuts me like a knife. So when I stop to consider everything that's come to pass, reflected in that dirty mirror, it's my self-portrait with a glass. Vincent van Gogh was a master, though he was a very troubled man. And when I saw his self-portraits, well, I began to understand. I know my face is not handsome, and I know I wear my share of scars, but every one of them has a story, a second-hand guitar. So when I stop to consider everything that's come to pass, reflected in that dirty mirror, that's my self-portrait with a glass. You may have tripped, you may have stumbled, and you may have fell flat on your face. There's still hope that tomorrow will find you in a better place. You got to rise above your fortune, you got to hold your own life dear, you got to find your own answers. What is you doing here? So when you stop to consider everything that's come to pass, reflected in that dirty mirror, it's your self-portrait with a glass.
Thank
that's
you.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's one of the songs we do with the band.
That's so cool. I know we usually have some news coming, but...
We're good.
But I know if you don't do Fool from Memphis, I can't come back Monday. I've already been... I'm not threatened.
I didn't say that. I was going to hold you responsible.
Oh, okay. I knew it was something like that.
We're getting long in the tooth here.
No, we're fine. What's the story behind that song?
Yes.
Well, I had been kind of writing this song actually for a pretty long time, and it was just kind of recollections of of things that I've done that I felt like were really unique to Memphis.
Yeah.
Because it's a pretty unique town, and I guess one of those things I didn't realize it until I traveled around a bit. It's like,
yeah, when you get away from it, it looks different, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's like, this is honestly a pretty magical place. And yeah. I had all these really cool experiences kind of growing up. Like I always tease, like, y'all believe I used to be a little fat redneck kid? And kind of growing up in Memphis, and a lot of, you know, my dad came from a pretty blue-collar background, and there are certain pleasures that go with that some other folks don't experience. So, like, you know, my childhood was, you know, going to wrestling, and it's just pronounced wrestling. And
you know,
you got to say it right. Yeah.
That's exactly right. Yeah. So I was doing the You're Sing for Your Supper night, and I should have been. I'm real bad. I don't make set list with a band. I do because they get mad at me if I don't.
Right.
Oh God, my son in particular. If I start, you know, veering from.
I'm like that too.
Yeah.
Someone did that to me on this radio show.
Yeah,
before.
I didn't even know. You know.
Well,
I'm thinking I do. So anyway, yeah. So I should have been getting songs together, but for whatever reason, I ran back across those words, and I was like, you know, I need something to tie it together. And I just thought for a minute. It's the most Memphis thing that ever happened to me. And I had to say, man, it was the time I saw Jerry Lawler wrestle Junkyard Dog at Monster Trucks. They drug a ring right out in the middle of the intermission. And, you know, it was, yeah, it just doesn't get any more Memphis than that.
No, it doesn't, no. But every verse in there is very real, you know.
Oh, yeah.
It's a palpable thing, you know, the things that you talk about. You know?
Oh, yeah, it all happened. Like, either happened to me or my friends. In fact, there's a line about, you know, I'll get another job tomorrow.
Yeah.
I had this buddy, and I guess he was a great cook because he always got jobs. But, I mean, there was literally times like, man, aren't you supposed to be at work? I get another one tomorrow. And we'd be like riding around looking for his car because
he didn't know where he put it. Yeah.
I had no idea where he put his car. And we figured out if we waited till kind of the wee hours of the morning as the sun was coming up, the bar parking lots are kind of thinned out. So, you know, you'd head Alex's, you'd hit a couple other joints, and you say, all right, we know it's at one of these places.
Funny.
You know what I mean?
That's so funny. Yeah.
But yeah, I'll pick this one. It's called A Fool from Memphis. And it's my love letter to my hometown. Woke up this morning from a $10 drunk. Sometimes I just can't believe my luck. Feel like I got hit by a truck. Getting by in Memphis. Laid out on the sidewalk down on Madison Avenue. My best friend said, man, what's wrong with you? Pulled our change for a 40. Getting high in Memphis. Cracking noon and my telephone is ringing. Late for my job in a greasy kitchen. I'll get another one tomorrow. Getting fired in Memphis. But I saw Jerry Lawler wrestle Junkyard Dog at the intermission of a Monster Truck Show. Mid-South Coliseum, I was 10 years old. Down at Riverside Speedway on a Saturday night, I seen a couple of good old boys get into an axe handle fight. 8-on-1, I didn't think it was right. They're cracking heads in West Memphis. And a car on fire outside of Wild Bill's. Somebody's hollering, somebody's gonna get killed. Me, I don't know nothing. I mind my business in Memphis. But I remember Sputnik spinning in front of Joe's liquor store, doing the funky chicken on Rayford's light-up dance floor. We all danced till our feet were sore. Down in Memphis. But I saw Jerry Lawler wrestle Junkyard Dog at the intermission of a Monster Truck Show. Mid-South Coliseum, I was 10 years old. In the Tomb of Doom, I saw the Grateful Dead. When all the downtown smelled like Wonder Bread.
That's a happy place inside of my head. I need a miracle in Memphis, 'cause I'm in love with a river that I can't swim across. And I believe my blood type might be barbecue sauce. I might wander, but I ain't lost. Just point me back to Memphis. That day comes and I meet my fate. I'm gonna Jackie Fargo strut through them pearly gates. Rufus Thomas will turn to Johnny Cash and he'll say, another fool from Memphis. But I saw Jerry Lawler wrestle Junkyard Dog at the intermission of a monster truck show. Mid-South Coliseum, I was 10 years old.
I love that song so much. Yeah, that's such a good
the bleed, the barbecue sauce.
Yeah, my blood type might be barbecue sauce.
Tell you one thing to add to your next song.
Uh-huh.
I was bowling with my dad. My dad was into music, and I was bowling with him. I was about 7 or 8 years old. I think I was 7. And on the lane next to me was Tojo Yamamoto and Jackie Fargo. And I kept staring at him because I used to watch wrestling with daddy all the time. And finally, Jackie Fargo came over with his dark roots and his long blonde hair, and he picked me up and kissed me on my forehead and put me back down. And then when, I guess maybe, I must have been 16 or 17, I was working at Dixie Mart selling men's clothes, and they came in to get their first two pink shirts, because pink had just come in as a shirt color.
Oh, right.
And I told him that story. I said, I know you don't remember me, but I was bowling. And he said, I did. They told me you were working here. It was so funny. And he was so cool, you know, just being funny. But they bought two pink shirts for me, and we had so much fun. We went over to the snack bar at Dixie Mart, and they got three steak sandwiches apiece.
Oh yeah,
and a Coke, and we sat there and talked. But it was one of the most fun memories I've ever had, because I love it.
Takes a lot of fuel to power that.
Three big steaks. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Well, yeah, you know, and I always say this: if you like read Robert Gordon's book, It Came from Memphis.
Yeah.
So much music history and wrestling history are just so intertwined together.
Oh yeah. Sure.
It's a pretty cool thing.
Yeah, that's cool. It's a great song, and I didn't even realize the Jackie Fargo thing was at the end of it.
Oh yeah, the Jackie Fargo strip.
Oh yeah.
I love it.
I grew up watching wrestling. Like I said, I always say at my shows when I play that song, it's like, if you're my age and you grew up in Memphis and you said you didn't watch wrestling, you're a damn liar.
I know you are.
You're just a damn liar. I'm sorry. I don't care how
Lance
cool you
Russell
are.
And
oh yeah, Howdy Doody and Banana Nose.
Uh huh. Yeah, that was cool. This has been so much fun.
It's been great. Thank you so much.
You're still one of my favorites.
Oh, that's good.
you didn't fall off your pedestal.
He didn't drop off the cliff over here.
And I get to come back Monday.
Yes, you do.
Because you did that song.
And who are you bringing in next week?
I think it's Loretta McMahon.
That's what I think it is up on the calendar, yeah. So that'll be fun. Yeah.
So we'll have a good one next week, but this has been so much fun.
There's going to be a lot of lady power in the room, Rick.
I'll be all right.
If people are looking to book you or contact information, you have a music page on
Facebook. Yeah, TonyMaynard.com. But Maynard doesn't have a Y. And that's why the last record was called No Y. It's
right, words, I like that.
There's no Y in my version of Maynard, M-A-N-A-R-D. So TonyMaynard.com.
Cool. And Coffee in the Cadillac is on YouTube. It's also on.
So it's it starts out on Facebook and
promotions.net.
It's on my website.
There's probably like 20 of them or more. I don't.
Yeah,
know.
Amazing. It's like 20. I think I just passed the 20 mark.
Yeah, I was gonna say I think I counted 20. Well, cool. Well, thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you for having me.
And I'm gonna try to swing by if we go to the Cooper Young Festival.
Yeah, we're playing early, 11:15. It's a great time.
That's a good time. That's when everybody's just starting to get drunk.
Right. Exactly. Which is really where we're best.
I've never done that at the Cooper Young Festival.
We're not a hardcore drunk band. We're a slightly buzzed band.
Yeah, and that's a perfect time.
A buzz band. Well, good.
You're on the main stage. Yeah,
on the main stage. Yeah.
Thank you so much. And we'll be looking for great things out of you. There's such a buzz about you now. I just hope it keeps going.
All right, well,
I'll see you next Monday.
Yes, you
and
will.
No bricks on the parking lot.
It'll all be good. Yeah.
Okay.
All right then. Thank you so much
for being here for Memphis Music Monday.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Right here at Radio Memphis.